Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In a new effort to seize the middle ground and forge a compromise on what's long been a polarizing issue, President Barack Obama says it's time to put aside stale policy debates and begin a new discussion about guns in America.
The president's effort comes 2 months after a gunman in Tucson went on a shooting rampage and killed 6 people and wounded 13, including Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. Here in Massachusetts, the debate revolves around some of the strictest gun laws in the nation.
And the question is, are those laws working? And how effective are those laws if laws in neighboring states are less strict and allow guns to flow into Massachusetts basically unchecked? A recent article in the Boston Herald began this way.
Banned machine guns are turning up in the hands of gangbangers and drug dealers from Holyoke to Cape Cod, alarming Bay State cops who are confronting a mini arms race they blame on lax gun laws in other states.
So as the president calls for a new discussion about guns, how should that new discussion take shape here? Where, if anywhere, is the middle ground? And what are the new ideas for compromise in this very old debate? Listeners, what do you think? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us in the studio is John Rosenthal. He's the chairman and founder of Stop Handgun Violence. He's also the owner of those huge billboards along the Mass Pike that you might have seen right in Boston that carry a pro-gun control message. You've probably seen them. John, good to have you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Also here in the studio, Jim Wallace. He's executive director of the Gun Owners Action League here in Massachusetts. He's also a board member of the National Rifle Association.
And not yet.
Not yet. You're running for it.
Yes.
Forgive me. But it's good to have you.
You just jinxed me.
In any event. I elected you right here
okay.
on Radio Boston. Right. We have new powers that people didn't even know about. Anyway, thanks for coming in.
All right, thanks.
So I know that you guys disagree on just about everything, but I'm going to ask this first question. I want you to both be brief. And I raise this idea of compromise, of middle ground quickly. Is there any middle ground in this debate that you can both agree on? Any at all? John?
Unfortunately, I don't think so, because I can't even get the NRA and Jim to agree that there should be a universal mandatory background check for all gun sales. And
okay,
that's where it has to begin.
We're going to come to these. Jim Wallace, what about you? Any middle ground with the folks who identify themselves as pro-gun control?
Well, actually, I think so. And matter of fact, with our bill that we filed last year and continue to work on this year, the Civil Rights and Public Safety Act, is to really get tougher on those who use guns unlawfully or even obtain them unlawfully. And that's what we're trying to do through that bill, is really start to put the hammer on the people to actually take the market away. And I think that's where the focus needs to be in the next, upcoming years.
So the focus should be on essentially keeping guns out of the hands of folks who shouldn't have them. Is that sort of a fair summary of what you said?
That's been the mantra for quite a while, but I look at it as actually making sure that the people who we cannot trust to have access to guns don't have access to freedom.
So such as convicted convicts, for example.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Who else? Shouldn't have guns?
Well, obviously, you have to look at the Arizona thing and the Virginia issue, the mental health issue. That's going to be a massive approach from all people who are involved in this, because the mental health community has a lot to say about this, and that's going to be a very difficult road to go down. But we've got to, even on that one, there should be some level of person in the mental health issues that we all agree shouldn't have any access to anything. I don't care if it's a baseball bat, a firearm, whatever.
Sure.
And then work down from there.
Okay, let me bring this over to John Rosenthal. A point just for to begin a conversation, does that work as a place to begin, that we could at least look for compromise here?
We should certainly be looking for compromise and creating accountability among everybody with respect to purchasing firearms. But honestly, it's disingenuous for Jim and the NRA to say, on one hand, we ought to be thinking about how to keep guns out of the hands of people that shouldn't have them, but then not support a background check requirement for all gun sales. So unless you go to a gun store in any state across the country, you don't have to have a background check to buy guns. And in 33 states, no ID, no background check requirement, cash and carry. So
you could be very clear, you're talking about the gun shows that are out there, for instance, in the state of New Hampshire, for example.
What I'm saying,
which are basically open air flea markets.
In 33 states, whether you go to a gun show, pawn shop, any private gun sale is allowed to be done from between private individuals, either a gun show or a pawn shop or out of your kitchen table, car trunk, or backpack. Legally, guns can be sold among individuals privately, cash and carry, no ID or background check. So if you're a felon in Massachusetts and you can't pass a background check or you can't go to a gun store because you can't pass a background check, you can legally go to 33 states privately buy guns, cash and carry, whether you're mentally ill or a felon. And I can't get the NRA or Jim to agree that there should be a background check for all gun sales, including people on suspected terrorist watch lists. The NRA does not support a background check requirement or any prohibition whatsoever on people on suspected terrorist watch lists from buying guns at gun stores.
Why not, Jim Wallace?
Well, first of all, let's make something really clear. You cannot go out of state and buy a handgun from anybody that's not a licensed dealer, period. I mean, you could do it, but you're breaking, 13 state and federal laws if you do that. In order to get a handgun, if you're a Massachusetts citizen, from out of state, it has to be transferred from a licensed dealer in that state to a licensed dealer in our state. And then you have to go through the whole process of the state paperwork, the federal paperwork, the background check. So, but anyway,
I don't want to interrupt you, but I do want to just clarify one thing, because I have a house in southern New Hampshire, and sometimes my family does. And sometimes I go up there, and I've gone right by a gun show in the summer and walked through just for kicks and try to understand what's operating there. I don't see anybody checking documentation in this particular gun show that I've been to.
Well, I mean, I can't answer for something I haven't been in, but what we're trying to focus on, this is a national debate. Hardly any other states have laws like we do here in Massachusetts. And, you know, you can blame it on other states or whatever, but they have not worked. Mostly because Massachusetts laws are so complicated, even the prosecutors have a tough time getting through them. But my emphasis, especially on the Civil Rights and Public Safety Act, is that we're dealing with two different issues here. We're dealing with the lawful possession issues, and we're dealing with the criminal enforcement issues. And what I want to get to, and maybe it's a pie in the sky, but I want to get to the point where the people who we don't trust to have access to guns don't have access to a gun show. So we don't have to worry about it. We need to really look at the people we're letting out of jail. We also need to look at the people that we're not prosecuting to the extent of the law. And a lot of it because in Massachusetts, there's so much gray area. We want to get rid of that gray area so that we can incarcerate and prosecute the hardcore criminals and separate them from the lawful possession guys who are just trying to figure out the laws. So once we get to a set of laws we can all actually understand and a set of laws that are useful, arguing about this other stuff, to me, just doesn't make any sense.
But, you know, just to sort of quote President Obama recently, he's talking about getting away from what he calls these stale arguments of the past. I'm going to be just as hard as John, but I'm just going to ask you, isn't this like a stale argument that you guys, I mean, this idea that we've got to enforce the existing laws?
No, I don't want to enforce the existing laws. That's why we're trying to change them. When we drafted the Civil Rights and Public Safety Act over 2 years ago, no one in the nation even thought of doing this. Of separating in law the lawful possession issues and the criminal enforcement issues. No one had even looked at it. We separated the issues so drastically that we even put different definition sections in each part of the law. And we called around to all my colleagues, I called around to people who we don't deal with usually, and this whole attempt is the first in the nation attempt to actually get this done.
John, do you want to talk about this proposed legislation that he's talking about? This is the Civil Rights and Public Safety Act that I guess is being considered, right? It's being considered.
Yeah, it's just in committee right now.
I'm not familiar with the details, but I will tell you that Massachusetts has the most comprehensive gun laws in the nation, the first in the nation Consumer Product Safety Commission regulations for firearms, because only one product is barred from the purview of the National Consumer Product Safety Commission. The real firearm. Toy guns and teddy bears have a multitude of federal regulations on how they're made, marketed, and sold. The real gun has none because the NRA has effectively lobbied Congress to prohibit the regulation of how guns are made and marketed. So Massachusetts has the first in the nation consumer protection standards. We have a 3.5 per 100,000 firearm fatality rate. The national average is 10.6 per 100,000. Arizona, where you don't even need a permit to carry a concealed handgun, has a 15 per 100,000 population.
So your argument is the tough laws are working here.
It's definitely working, and it's a shame that other states don't follow it. And the only reason that is the case, and the only reason why 150 Americans are shot every day, 83 die, including 8 kids between 0 and 19 years old. One every 3 hours, a child or teen is killed in this country. And we can't even get the NRA to allow the background check requirement for all gun sales.
I want to bring another voice into this conversation. But first, I want to tell listeners that we're talking about gun control in Massachusetts, the state's gun laws in particular. We're asking how well they're working and what we can do about laxer laws out of state, if that's a problem. And let me bring someone in who's on the front lines. Chief Kenneth LaValle, he's the superintendent of police in Lowell, Massachusetts, and good to have you, Chief.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you very much.
So you've been listening to this discussion. When it comes to the challenge of illegal guns, what are you seeing on the streets of Lowell, and what concerns you the most?
Well, I think that I can probably say that what we're seeing in Lowell is an uptick in gun violence in the city. As I look at the numbers from 2007 to 2010, we've seen an increase in gun incidents by 22%. In 2007, we had 179 gun incidents resulting in 57 arrests, and in 2010, it went up to 197 with 81 arrests. Hmm. So our numbers have increased in terms of firearms incidents and also arrests. And then the numbers of recovered firearms seized by our officers on the street increased from 58 in 2007 to 100 in 2010. Mm. So we're seeing certainly, we believe, to be an increase in the firearms violence in the city over the last 4 years, and much of that is attributed to either gang-related crime or drug-related crime.
And Chief, where do most of these guns come from that you're recovering? Any sense of where they're coming from? Because I guess I'm getting at it is this idea that we're surrounded by states with less stringent laws. Is that a problem as you view it?
Well, I think that if you look at the most recent data available, and it's for 2009, it's provided by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, they will identify the top 15 source states for firearms recovered in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Naturally, the top state is the Commonwealth itself. So in 2009, there were 395 firearms recovered in Massachusetts by police officers during the course of investigations and arrests that they made involving gun violence. That the next state at the top of the list is the state of New Hampshire with 105, then Maine at 84, and it keeps on dropping down. But after you hit New Hampshire and Maine in New England, we go down to Florida and Georgia with 53 weapons that were recovered in Massachusetts. That the source state was Florida and Georgia. So that's pretty significant. Most of the states are along the East Coast with the exception of California, which had 18 firearms recovered here in the Commonwealth, and that was obviously the farthest state away from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Mm.
I want to go to some callers, but very quickly, if I could just ask the two gentlemen in the studio, John Rosenthal, what does that tell you, what Chief LaValle is saying?
Well, what he's reporting what the ATF has reported, and what the ATF has historically reported is that two-thirds of all firearms traced to crime in Massachusetts come from out of state. And one-third from in-state. So he's saying that Massachusetts is roughly 30%. That's the highest number. But two-thirds, when you aggregate, you got two-thirds of all guns traced to crime come from out of state, starting with New Hampshire, Maine, Florida, Georgia, and Vermont. In fact, when the assault weapon ban expired in 2004, 7,500 AK-47s with high-capacity ammunition clips left Century Arms in St. Albans, New York, and headed down Route 91 into Massachusetts. And a lot of the weapons that he is seeing in his city, the Herald reported in our city, they're AK-47s, these high-capacity weapons that are no longer banned, number one, are preferred by criminals. And his law enforcement officers generally carry 13 rounds, and thanks to, frankly, a spineless Congress that allowed the high-capacity ammunition clip ban and assault weapon ban to expire in 2004. Well, police officers carry 13 rounds. Criminals can carry an unlimited number of rounds without having to reload, and that makes no sense whatsoever.
And Jim Wallace, I want to get you to respond to what Chief LaValle said. I mean, this idea of weapons coming from out of state, doesn't that suggest that to help these guys on the front lines, we should have tougher laws, uniform tougher laws across outside of the state of Massachusetts?
Well, again, you know, the central topic here is crime and criminals. It's not lawful gun owners. Again, that's why we are trying to separate the issues. Matter of fact, in our bill, in the criminal enforcement part of it, we actually want to form what we call the Criminal Firearms and Trafficking Division of the state police attached to the Attorney General's office. And that would actually help people like the chief who's, you know, they're finding themselves in a battle zone here, unfortunately. But, you know, the root cause of this is drugs. And drugs are completely outlawed across the country. You can't buy them anywhere, but they're everywhere. So a logical person has to look at this and say, okay, prohibition doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. All the evidence is there. No logical person can say a prohibition works. So what do we have to do? We have to take away the market by putting these people in prison. Ironically, one of the discussions nobody wants to have, and I don't know if the chief will even mention about this because I understand his position, but if you make something harder to get that a criminal wants without taking away the criminal, you've made it more valuable to them and made them more dangerous. So the issue is, again, the human criminal element. We need to address that. And our bill is going to help people like the chief do that.
Let me take some calls. Chief LaValle, I want to come back to you, but I do want to get some callers in. Let's go to Guy, who's calling from Foxborough.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty well. You're on the air, Guy. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Just a few points that have come up since I've been on hold. The chief said there were, 400 guns in Massachusetts that were confiscated during a they were confiscated by state police. Is that correct?
He said there were about 395 recovered in the state of Massachusetts. That's the figure that I think he used. But what's your
law enforcement agency?
So of all the law enforcement agencies in Massachusetts, a total of 400 guns were confiscated
from within Massachusetts.
Right.
The total is much higher than that.
No.
In other words, those are Massachusetts-based firearms. Those guns were firearms that came from the Commonwealth, not from other states, but were found in Massachusetts.
Yes, sir, I understand that.
So 66% came from out of state, so a much That's higher number than 400.
Yeah, yeah Guy, what's the point? What's the point you want to make? Because our time is running short.
Right. How many legal firearms that came from Massachusetts that were not confiscated by police, or in other words, are not being used in criminal activity?
So is your point that most of the guns in Massachusetts are legally owned and owned for good reason? I mean, which is a fine point to make. I'm just urging you to make it.
Absolutely. But I want to make sure I have my facts straight.
Okay.
To the point, I'm for background checks, provided they have a stringent limit about what they're actually checking for. If you're going to start banning guns because somebody doesn't have a parking ticket, that's one thing.
All right, Guy, I think we got your point, and I want to move on to another caller, and I'm grateful for your call. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Lexington. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I'm on the air.
You are.
Excellent. Hey, I just want to open this with saying I'm a combat vet and a hunter, and I have a deep and abiding relationship with my rifles. And the question is really for Jim, and I expect him to avoid it.
This is Jim Wallace, the Gun Owners Action League, right?
What is the NRA's philosophical objection to a background check, given that you stated repeatedly that your goal is to keep hands or weapons out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them?
Good question, Jim.
Well, again, I don't speak for the NRA. I know he's expecting me to avoid, but I don't. I only speak for Gun Owners Action League.
I got to push back because you are running for the board of the NRA,
right.
So you are in a position to at least express an opinion about the NRA.
Well, I can express an opinion, but I don't speak for them, and
no,
I don't pretend
fine.
To. It's like anybody else who sits on a board anywhere.
Yeah.
The biggest issue, philosophically, that I have with it is that before I want my government to do anything about me, whether it's check me or anything else, I want them to do everything they possibly can to make sure they're dealing with a human criminal element. And frankly, they're not scratching the surface. So until you do your job as a government, dealing with that criminal element and dealing with all the proposals that we have in front of you to help you do that, don't ask me to do anything because I haven't done anything wrong. Hmm. Now, that may seem like avoiding it, but it's not. That's my opinion. Hmm. And we have all the facts here in Massachusetts because of the draconian gun laws that we live under in the treatment of gun owners here in Massachusetts. The evidence is there. You know, back in 1998, before the Massachusetts Gun Control Act, we had 1.5 million licensed gun owners. And we're down to about 230,000 now. And at the same time, gun crime has gone up 200%. Now, whether we can blame that on other states or not, the fact is the gun laws don't work. And we're proposing the Civil Rights and Public Safety Act to make them work.
Yeah. Can I
interrupt? I'm going to come back to you, John. It's just, we haven't heard from Chief LaValle in a moment. I just want to get a response from you, Chief, about what you heard just then from Jim Wallace. Gun laws don't work. I'm really interested to hear from the folks who are on the front lines of, you know, trying to maintain order in our cities, if you agree with that.
Right. I think that, you know, it's my opinion that the gun laws that we have, I think, have an impact on crime in the Commonwealth in terms of keeping numbers lower than they could be. In other words, the death rates we talked about and what was suggested earlier, that fewer people are shot in the Commonwealth, I think is a testament to some of the strict laws that we have. And I know the District Attorney's Office in Middlesex County prosecutes these cases. But I'll tell you this, there's no doubt that these people who are involved in criminal activity, be it gang activity or drug activity, are hell-bent on getting a hold of weapons. And it's almost like a nuclear weapons race between countries. They know that their rival has a gun, and they're not going to go without one themselves. So they'll do everything they can. It's a very hot commodity. It's extremely important for them to obtain a firearm, so they'll have the firepower that they have with their rival, that they'll be able to use a firearm if necessary. And I think that one of the things that we've seen in Lowell, and I think other cities in the Commonwealth, is that the weapons that are coming, that are available in the criminal underworld in Massachusetts, come from two basic sources. One is from a house break or a break into a business where people may have firearms in their homes, or a dealer, a gun dealer, or the business is broken into and the firearms are stolen, or they come from outside the state in a similar way, either from a break-in in an establishment, a business, or a home, or through a straw purchase. Hmm. And the straw purchase is something that we've seen and we've recognized is occurring, and these guns are making their way into Massachusetts from other states through this straw purchase process.
All right, that's a problem. Well, Chief Kenneth LaValle, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate
pleasure.
You taking your time out of a busy day. Good
Not
to have you.
Take care.
And in the time that remains, I want to ask Jim Wallace and John Rosenthal two, and we really have just seconds left, but two sort of tough questions here. Jim Wallace, first to you. President Obama trying to encourage a new dialogue. The head of the NRA, Mr. LaPierre, refuses to even participate in this. Why?
You're going to have to ask Wayne.
Well, what do you think? You want to sit on the board there. I mean, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Really,
but
you don't want to venture?
I know here in Massachusetts, I've tried for 4 years to sit down with the governor, and I got to tell you, I was really ashamed when I walked into the governor's office. It's the first time in my career I've ever had my card handed back to me.
John Rosenthal, final question to you. It looks to me like gun control forces are in retreat. The assault ban weapons expired. There's been no federal effort to revive it. There have been shootings from Columbine to Virginia Tech to Tucson. We can't even get legislation to ban multiple round clips. It looks like you guys are losing. So isn't it time for another approach somehow to make this push
well,
this agenda forward?
I'm a gun owner. I was thrilled to hear both callers call in saying they're gun owners. One's a combat vet who says, why is the NRA opposed to background checks? We're all losing the battle, and frankly, 83 more Americans will be buried today from the only product not regulated by the National Consumer Product Safety Commission, and there isn't even a universal background check for all gun sales in this country. I was asked to go to the White House to meet with the president and his advisors. He had just come back from Mexico and was told by the Mexican president to please renew the ban on assault weapons, and he got a letter from 65 Democrats, including Gabby Gifford, saying, don't touch high-capacity magazines or assault weapons if you want health care. That's what we're up against. It's the NRA blood money that's that's weakening the knees of the spineless Congress in this country.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it there, and obviously this debate goes on and on, but I want to thank you both for coming in. John Rosenthal, chairman and founder of Stop Handgun Violence, good to have you.
Thank you.
And Jim Wallace, executive director of Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts. Thank you, Jim, for coming in as
Thanks
well.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, one of classical music's hottest young maestro joins us, Courtney Lewis, conductor of Boston's Discovery Ensemble. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.